One of the biggest strengths of the convenience sector is the diversity of the people that it employs. Local shops provide jobs for over 400,000 people from all sorts of different backgrounds and with a wide range of additional responsibilities. On this episode of the podcast, we're discussing how convenience stores are playing a crucial role in providing career opportunities to a segment of the workforce that is often overlooked.
Welcome, everyone. And this is a really special-ish edition of the Local Shop podcast. We've got some special guests here to talk about a very, very important issue. Hopefully, a number of you have seen that we recently published a guide with the Retail Sector Council called Employment Opportunities for Everyone. And this showcases a number of the ways in which retail businesses of all kinds, and it features online businesses, department stores, large businesses, small businesses, big box, small box, all those sort of businesses are working with groups that are often overlooked in the recruitment process, ultimately to try to find brilliant colleagues for their businesses, but also to offer some opportunities to people who perhaps would benefit even more from those opportunities being made available to them. And with that, we want to showcase those great stories and encourage retailers of all kinds to think about where they can find their next brilliant colleague from. And hopefully, using that guide, and hopefully you'll be inspired by this podcast and this conversation as well, we can have a few more of those people finding some more opportunities in our sector. And obviously, particularly in this conversation and this group of people, we're interested in the convenience store sector, which we represent. So I'm joined by three fantastic experts on this subject. We'll go into the questions in a second, but just introduce each of you in turn, just so I have it on my screen. So firstly, Anna, do you want to just introduce yourself briefly?
Absolutely. So I'm Anna Butcher. I work for the John Lewis Partnership. We own the two brands, Waitrose and John Lewis, and I am the Care Experience Manager.
Brilliant. Thanks, Anna. And Anna was a great participant in our conference recently as well. Phil, over to you.
Thanks, James. Phil Ponsonby, I'm the CEO at Mid Counties Cooperative, one of the larger retail regional cooperative societies in the UK. We have interests in food retailing, childcare nurseries, travel business, and also a joint venture with Octopus Energy and our utilities partnerships.
Fantastic. I always had to remind myself how much more you do than retail, and it's a lot. Gareth, on to you.
Hi, James. I'm Gareth Evans. I'm the Director of Operations at Spectra. We're a social impact and diversity and inclusion company.
And Gareth, I'll come to you first, actually, because one of the things we've worked together on and feeding into the guide and feeding into this conversation and feeding into the work we did at our conference as well was about care leavers in particular. Can you give us a bit of context about the perspective, the experiences, and the needs of and the common challenges for people who've experienced the care system?
Sure. I mean, in terms of challenges for care leavers seeking employment in the retail space, I don't think they'd be that different to seeking employment in other areas of industry. And our other panelists might be able to be more specific on retail, but I'd point to two challenges in terms of seeking employment opportunities for care leavers. The first one will be experience. You know, often employers, even for young applicants, will be looking for, if not deep experience, I think moments of experience or demonstrations of initiative shown towards that industry. And lots of our young people, because of instability in their educational journey, moving around a lot between foster carers or residential placements, which is very common, won't have had that, work experience week at a local shop or a local office, won't have had that parent saying, you know, why don't you spend the summer working in retail near our house before sixth form? and so on. So there's often a lack of experience compared with peers. The second point is really connected to that, I think, which is about lack of those informal, familial and social networks that often, I think, lead to your first part-time job or full-time job. Certainly they did for me. You know, a parent saying, we know so-and-so who's linked to that retailer or who's linked to that local business. Mm-hmm. So I think those two challenges kind of conspire for lots of our young people and mean that they are, you know, hitting their further education or higher education or school leaving with a lack of experience compared with their age group peers.
Yeah, that's really, really well explained, Gareth. And so, Anna, from your point of view, in terms of bringing care experienced people into the business, well, firstly, what sort of challenges do you see in those individuals? And secondly, how do you configure programs in the business to support opportunities for those people?
I could talk for a long time about this, James, so keep me to time. I think in terms of the challenges that care experienced people face, I'm generalising here because all care experienced people are individual, they'll have mm-hmm. different life experiences. Things that I've learned since working on the programme for the John Lewis Partnership is that becoming care experienced can happen at any age. So we often think that it might happen from childhood, but I've met somebody whose world changed around them at the age of 17. So their family support system became less stable. They were then supported by the care system, and that led to Gareth's point, some real instability. It really threw them into a complete life-changing experience at a time when they were going on to seek further education and employment. So it can have such a huge impact. In terms of the things that we see, if somebody is care experienced and they have a different level of support around them, we call that the scaffold of support. So the scaffold of support that I've grown up with, and I'm very privileged to have grown up with it, are things like my parents helping me to fill in an application form. Things like my dad, I clearly remember waking me up for my part-time job to say, you're due to be at work. And it's those small things that I've realised that I took for granted during my growing up with the family who I lived with my biological parents. So for care experienced people, if you're navigating a world which has completely changed, you might have moved school several times, you might have moved towns several times, your friendship group has changed because of that. Seeking employment can be really hard, and then holding down employment is equally as hard because it's one more thing to add to your mental load at a time when your world is challenging for you. So the things that we do, and to reference back to some of the points that Gareth made, it's really practical steps that employers can take. And in a retailer that has, you know, high turnover, we've got some really simple steps that can help care experienced people find work. So we offer work experience, and that's the experience that you might take for granted because you found it through a family network. That work experience is easy for retailers to give to young people. They can add that to their CV. What we try and do is give them some feedback and a certificate to say these are the skills you've learned, so they can take that work experience on and hopefully apply for our business, but it could be that they go and apply elsewhere. So that's one example of simple steps that we take. I could talk way more about the whole program, and I will do if you'd like me to.
Well, that will pick you up, for sure. Yeah,
those kind of things are just really practical and pretty easy to implement, and they'll make a big difference.
Yeah, that's brilliant, Anna. Thank you. And Phil, I mean, you might have some reflections on people coming to your business and their backgrounds and so on. But from an employer perspective, what benefits have you seen from working with whether it's care leavers or all underprivileged groups, individuals? What benefits has that brought to the business?
Well, I mean, firstly, I think we recognise the challenges, and I would agree with Gareth and Anna in terms of some of those barriers. And certainly we look to work with individuals that are facing barriers to employment. So, you know, they may be anxious or lacking confidence. They may not have worked before, or they may just have fallen on hard times. And so we seek them out and we try to create them opportunities. The benefit to us is that, firstly, we find they're very committed once they're on board. And once you've given them that confidence and they've gone through the program, they become, you know, very loyal to us as an organization. They really do, you know, they are genuinely grateful for the opportunity. And I think that's returned through a loyalty. It also means that, you know, we are creating an environment where anyone feels they can come and work for us. And that's important because it is hard to recruit people, particularly in, you know, in retail, in the retail arena. And I think I would also just echo Gareth, and I said, one of the things I find is that, and there's a real danger around this, is that companies are constantly looking to improve efficiencies and using AI and algorithms in the recruitment process. And that can sometimes create barriers for people, you know, because if you're subjected to an algorithmic approach to whether you fit the bill or not, you'll probably get rejected on the online process. So what we've done is try to reach out through the networks to go, you know, go around that and find people. And I think they genuinely appreciate that because many of them, certainly the program that we're running, that we started last year as a pilot, the majority of the people that have come to us have never worked before.
Wow, that's extraordinary. And you say people that would probably then be sifted out of the process because that would be one of the qualifiers, wouldn't it? Some work experience, some relevant work experience, and there are good reasons why they've been able to have that. And Phil, I'll you first, and I'll come to you, Anna, as well. Have you got? Can you give us a sort of success story or an example of something that's happened and which has really added value to the business and hopefully to that individual as well?
Yeah, I mean, we launched a program last year called Fairer Future Program. We piloted it in Walsall Town Centre because Walsall is a deprived area. We part of the West Midlands, which has over index on people seeking benefits and particularly economically inactive. So we were aware there was a social problem there, but equally we want to recruit, got lots of shops in that area. So we developed this program and launched it last year. I think we had 18 graduates on the program last year. It's a 9 or 12 week program they go through. So it helps them in terms of getting over their anxieties, building confidence. If they've got any mental health issues, those sorts of things, it also helps to educate them. So they'll do a certain amount of classroom training. So we built a classroom in the back of the store. But a couple of the really great successes from that program. So one particular individual, Luke, he joined that program last year, couldn't get a job, couldn't work, was lacking confidence. He came through the program. He now works for us, but a couple of weekends ago, he attended our AGM and in front of 300 people, he interviewed Dame Tanny Gray Thompson on stage. And then a few days later was on BBC West Midlands talking about the programme. So he's gone from this individual that could hardly look you in the eye and speak to you to someone who now is full of confidence, prepared to appear on live radio broadcasts, interview Paralympians. So it just shows what can be done if you give people a chance. So a great example.
Wow. They basically a media personality. Yeah. incredible. You know, that example. Anna, have you got any sort of examples that might sort of bring it to life in the way that Phil did there? And also, any drawbacks, any challenges, any of the particular barriers that you might have found?
I just would like to reflect first on the story that Phil's just shared. And I think it just brings to life the talent that exists in everyone and that talent that might not be discovered if you don't take these practical steps to support people who are facing barriers and inequality that's through no fault of their own. So I think that story is fantastic. In terms of success stories for us, we have two people who I can think of in particular, but everyone who we've recruited we see as a great success story. They've added value to our business and hopefully we've added value to them. But two people who joined over the last couple of years through our Building Happier Futures employment programme. One of them is now running the employment programme in their local shop. So they run the programme for the people who apply through the programme now. So they host the work experience, they organise all of the activities that sit around that. They help with interview skills training that we offer. So that's just brilliant to see that person thriving and running the programme when they started, similarly to Luke, who you mentioned, Phil, as a very quiet and more reserved person. And then the other person who I was with on Saturday, we were at the Fostering Networks Foster Care Fortnight Walk. He is part of our Care Experience Network. So we have an internal network for anyone who's care experienced in the John Lewis Partnership. You may have been recruited through our programme or you may have already worked here. And that brings together everybody who has care experience to learn from each other, support from each other, and also allies. And that person is very much part of that network. They're part of the committee, they bring ideas forward, they join us at all of our events, and exactly like Phil said, started fairly reserved, now full of confidence and just happy to help with the programme at a strategic level as well as in their locality.
Yeah, it's an incredibly sustainable programme, isn't it? If you're actually literally getting the people who've come through the programme, then moves to the point where they're running it. That's exactly what sustainability is.
Yeah.
And but either Anna or Phil, and any sort of challenges, because I'm sure retailers, particularly smaller businesses, listening to this, you know, might imagine there are challenges in the sense there are probably reasons why they haven't necessarily thought of this before. You know, why is and really unlock these opportunities already. So what are the sort of drawbacks or the challenges or the barriers that you need to overcome that people might want to look out for? I'll start with you, Anna, but Phil, you might have some reflections then, Gareth.
So I think for us, one of the challenges we found in our early research was a lack of understanding about what care experience means, and also the stigma that can sometimes be attached to it. So for us, the challenge was, how do we equip our workforce, so how do we equip our people managers and the people who work alongside our care experience partners, how do we upskill them to understand the barriers but also understand that talent and potential that's just below the surface? So we have overcome that by running a training program with our charity partner Who Cares Scotland. So it's care experience awareness, and it covers in detail what does it mean to be care experienced and how can employer support. And also things like what might be triggers in the workplace, things to just be aware of so that you can be the most supportive environment for the people who join as possible. So hopefully that's a drawback, but also a way that we can get around it by training the workforce, which is something we're really proud of.
Yeah, so were there any sort of barriers that you found you had to tackle or approach?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we are focusing on people with vulnerabilities, so people that have autism or, you know, real lacking or anxieties. And we've deliberately reached out to networks in around Walsall to find these people. And we've worked with an organisation called Miss Macaroon, who are a social interests organisation and a brilliant organisation. They've done this in their Macaroon factory at Aston in Birmingham, and so they had the expertise and worked with us. And one of the things that we recognised really early on is we can't just let people loose on the sales floor. So, you know, we invested in a classroom and a sensory quiet area at the back of the store, so that the first few weeks of their programme, they're actually just in the classroom, just learning and getting their confidence before they then are integrated into the food sales area or the coffee shop. So we'll also work in there. So they were barriers in sort of safeguarding those sorts of things, making sure, because there are vulnerabilities, that they're looked after. We've also invested in a full-time program manager on the site, who's their coach and networker, and they get the support of a specialist mental health support person as well, that's through the Miss Macaroon program. So, and that's not just whilst the program's running, it's after they've completed the program as well. So when they go out into the world and work, whether that's with us or someone else, they've got that contact, that support mechanism. But certainly we couldn't have done this on our own. We turned to, you know, experts to help us to do this in a partnership. And I think that was really important.
So I'm going to turn to an expert now, and Gareth, to ask about some of the things that I think about retailers particularly, but businesses can do to sort of prepare themselves as well as possible for working with care experience people, or indeed other people from underprivileged backgrounds who want to bring into the business. What are the sort of steps you'd advise businesses to start with to put themselves in the best position to have the best experience?
Yeah, I'm gonna talk about three things, James. So, some of this has been touched on already by Phil and Anna, which is great. The first point, Phil talked about AI and algorithmic, you know, recruitment, and then in a counterpoint, he talked about networks and building relationships. And I think if there's one thing that I think is the most important for engaging and recruiting care leavers or people from other communities with barriers to work, it is taking the time to build networks with local authorities, FE colleges, the Job Centre Plus network, really getting into the communities that you are trying to recruit from, and building those relationships, because the relationships between those institutions and the young people or the people that they are supporting, I think, are about the most important thing that you can kind of leverage in welcoming those people into your workplace. And as we've discussed, you know, these are often people who are not just going to respond to a job advert, you know, on Instagram or through a more traditional kind of recruitment space. So it is really about building relationships. The second point, and I think both of, you know, both of my fellow panelists are great examples of this. I think there's something about longevity and commitment from employers here. And we, you know, we see a huge range of approaches from a range of employers through our work. And I think it's not going to be something that you kind of crack overnight, recruiting from the care experience community. You need to take the time to test out approaches, see how they work, iterate those approaches, and also show young people from those communities that you are there for the long run. You are there to kind of engage and to support and to make an impact. So there's a longevity point. And the third point that I think is important is around clarity of processes. Lots of our young people will be applying for jobs for the first time. As Anna talked about, they'll typically have faced considerable instability in their later teens, in their early 20s. And I think for employers, just being really clear about application processes, expectations, what happens at an interview, what happens after an interview. You know, sometimes, and I'm sure we're guilty of this at Spectra as well, sometimes we can be quite casual about talking through recruitment processes. You know, let's have an initial chat. We'll give you a call. We'll jump on Zoom. And I think for lots of our young people, that clarity of process is really important.
That's a really great bit of advice, isn't that? There's the harder factors that make that you can see why those are real barriers. But some of the things, the softer things in terms of the type of language we use and that sort of business speak, some of which is actually quite casual, I can see how that, if you're not used to that, and if that's not, you know, language you would speak in and necessarily understand what all those things mean, that can become unintentionally probably an additional barrier. So that's a really great, example. I want to just talk a little bit about benefits, and then want to finish up by talking about how retailers get started and do something here. So I'm going to start with you, Anna, and then Phil might have a view as well, around the involvement with other colleagues in the business, whether that's around mentorship, whether that's around any challenges and problems and changes that you need to mindset from those other colleagues, and the other benefits that it can bring to other colleagues. So people, I'm particularly thinking about people, not necessarily management positions, but people working on the shop floor and in the business, really alongside people from less privileged backgrounds. Anna, what have you found and what have you learned about that whole part of the equation?
So I think we've learned that people want to support people. Mm-hmm. So we've got brilliant. We call the people who work for the John Lewis Partnership our partners because we're employee owned. And what we have found in our partner population is that they just want to get involved in this program. They working in their local community where care experienced people live as well. So mm-hmm. just building those relationships across the community is something our partners in our shops already do. So this is just a different layer on top of that to help find the networks that exist in your community that you might not have known about, they're a bit lesser known. So through mm-hmm. your local authorities or other organisations. Then the benefits we found is we can see through some of our employee survey data that people who are involved in running this programme feel more motivated. They're more connected to our purpose as a business. Our purpose is about building a happier world via working to sustain happier business, happier world and happier people. So what we found is that the people who are involved in the programme feel more connected to that purpose. Mm-hmm. So that's a you know, brilliant benefit, alongside knowing that this is a cause that customers care about. So we did some research in the early days and we did find that this is something that customers feel that retailers can make a difference to, and it's something they'd like to see us doing more of as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure Phil has got loads of insight and data on that as well for Co-op, but yeah, they're just some of the benefits.
Yes, and so yeah, Phil, so other colleagues and customers, what evidence do you have of benefits there?
Yeah, I mean, I completely echo what Anna just said, actually. I mean, it is probably, of all the impacts from the programme that we run in its first year last year, and we're into our second year now, so we've got another 24 graduates coming through in Warsaw this year. But the biggest impact, the most profound impact, was on colleagues in the store. And as Anna said, when our own pulse surveys, we saw the sort of pride ratings go off the scale in that site, because mm-hmm. they could see the investment we were making, because we put the money into this. It's not, you know, we've not gone out seeking funding for it. We've done it. So they could see that, but they could, the transformation in the individuals that came through the program and the effect it had on them and their parents as well, and how our colleagues felt about that. They felt they were an important part of creating that safe environment for those young people to thrive. And the effect it had on them was profound. They were just so proud of what they'd achieved as a team. The store manager, the area manager felt the same way. The area manager then got other Warsaw store managers involved who recruited some of the graduates into their stores. So they felt the same way. So we saw this, this really, really great impact in terms of how they felt about as an organization. We have a similar purpose to John Lewis Partnership in terms of we're about creating a fairer world through the power of cooperation. And actually, how do you turn up in reality and make that true on the ground? And so our colleagues could connect the purpose to what we were doing. And I think that was a great learning for us and a brilliant impact. And we had an anniversary event at Warsaw Town Hall, and all of our colleagues turned up, but also all of our senior management teams turned up as well. Some of our board directors turned up, all the graduates turned up and spoke about how it affected their lives. And you could just sense the feeling that people got about what a great thing this is. And so we're going to be rolling this out now into other locations and other areas. And so, you know, but that impact has been profound.
And a very sustained impact as well. You say there's that group of people, and obviously you're doing it year after year, which is great, but even if that one cohort, those people will take those experiences the rest of their lives, they'll talk to other people about it. And so it's a thing.
One of the parents came up to me and said, "But you know, can I just tell you that we've got a new Michael and we want to keep this Michael?" You know, and you think, well, that's affecting his life, but his parents' life, his friend's life, you know, and that's the point. You sort of break that chain somehow. And I said, we're not experts in this. We work with some brilliant partners to do it. You know, and as Gareth said, the network is so important, the referral agencies that bring these people to us. But yeah, it has a major impact on people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Gareth, I'll come to you first, and then Phil and Anna, really for the, we touched on some of this so far, but where other retailers listening to this should start in terms of if they want to do more in terms of inclusive hiring practices, or in terms of getting involved in specific, really in-depth programs, which we've heard about today. And those are the two things that are very linked together. So Gareth, where should retailers start looking for advice and taking the next steps forward?
Well, I'd be silly not to plug our work on this note, James. So we
that's why I asked the question, Gareth. I'd love the things to be.
With expert input from Anna's team at John Lewis, we produced a inclusive employment toolkit last year. It sounds like Fairer Futures would be a great contributor as well. But we produced a toolkit last year that has a care leaver lens, but is certainly applicable to other underserved and underrepresented groups. And that includes guidance on all of the kind of steps that we've talked about, from initial engagement, recruitment, through to onboarding and post-employment support and career development. That toolkit's free to download through our website. So that's very accessible. And my other point would be just coming back again to kind of relationship building in communities. You know, if you are an employer that is seeking to reflect the community that you operate in, I think starting by engaging the local authority, you know, employment liaison teams, care leaver teams, getting to know your care leaver SPOCs at Job Centre Plus branches, engaging with further education colleges, is a really great place to kind of put in initial time. And I think that goes for a number of groups, you know, not just talking about care experience young people.
I want to come on to that as well, actually, because we have rightly, I think, taken it through that lens, but there's lots of other groups we perhaps talk about from a very long podcast. Anna, I'm going to come to you next in terms of advice for retail, where to start.
I think I'd say quite simply start somewhere. So you can start small and learn later on that, which is what we did. So we piloted our work a couple of years ago. But the second thing I'd say, and then I've got one third point, is to talk to people with lived experience. So before we did any work, we had focus groups and listening groups with people who have care experience. So what that meant was that we could bring through their ideas, their thoughts and their voice into anything that we did, so that if we were in any danger of patronising or doing the wrong thing, we'd got a group who really helped us to shape what we did for the future. And we continually do that. So if we have a customer proposition, we'll test that on care experience people. And our employability programme is what it is today because of the ideas of the people who have lived experience and who took part in it. And then the second thing I'd say, all of what Gareth said, absolutely, there's loads out there to support you and a great network. But if you wanted to come and talk to the John Lewis Partnership, we're more than happy to share our work, really happy to share the programme and how it works. So I'm sure we can include our email address in the notes for the podcast, but we're really happy to talk to other organisations about what we do and what we've learned, and to learn from other organisations. So I've already got yourselves on the list, Phil, to come and really learn from what you've done. So we're happy to share, but also to continually learn from the experts who are out there doing this day to day.
Yeah, that's great. Phil, final point to you, really, I mean, a reflection on that, but also you kind of touched on it there. Other sort of groups of people, other individuals who might have had other experiences, where else can we be looking for other brilliant colleagues that maybe we might have overlooked some in the past? So practical support, where to start, and then some other reflections on some people we could be seeking out.
Certainly. I mean, on the point where to start, I'm going to completely echo what Anna and Gareth said. It's definitely worth seeing. I think also, as an employer, you do have to start with deciding what type of employer you want to be. Because if you just see this as a fixed recruitment, then I think you'll do it a disservice. You've got to see this as a more sustainable effort that you're prepared to invest in for the long term. And it's about changing people's lives. And if as a result of that, they become great employees for you, everyone wins. So I would really think about that first and foremost. And, you know, it doesn't matter how big or small you are in that respect, it's important. And then also, as been said, you know, don't try and do this alone. Either speak to us or John Lewis, Anna or Gareth or the other organisations. There are lots of networking opportunities and people are out there that are trying to support these types of programmes. So I would certainly do your homework in that respect. In terms of the other groups, I mean, what we've tried to do, one of the things we learned early on is that you sometimes look to try and bring people from different backgrounds, different areas that are perhaps facing different issues. What we did find is actually if we can bring people in that are facing similar issues, actually it really helps them. So I mean, that's the point with the care leavers, but I think in our world, because we're looking at people potentially with autism, we're looking at one of the groups we had was young parents, the single young parents, particularly single young mothers that clearly want to work but have childcare issues, etc. And so we've tried to great cohorts of people with similar challenges, because that helps their confidence. They can see I'm not alone here, there's other people facing it. And actually it also creates friendship groups as part of it. So, you know, we've identified various different groups now that we look, and that helps us also within the network in referral agencies, because they tend to be able to then that direction. So some of that structure that we put around it allows us to reach out to different groups. But it's a really valuable thing to do, because there are young people out there, you know, in our case, we're looking at people aged 18, 30 that haven't worked before or aren't working but want to work. They just need that helping hand into work.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really good point as well. And I think that you know, with some of the labour market issues in recent years, we've probably framed this a little bit sometimes as being about how do we fill those roles, which is a perfectly legitimate question to ask. But I think you're right. You've probably got to take it from a, you know, from the other standpoint, and then that becomes a happy outcome from it as well. That's been so insightful for me. We could talk for a very long time, but we've already probably gone slightly over time, and we barely scratched the surface. But hopefully everyone's got some really good practical insights, knows where to go for some more information, and has taken some inspiration from those stories. So thanks very much, Gareth. Thank you, Anna. And thank you very much, Phil. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, James.